This week, we can't believe how wrong we were about the crab feeder sticking around for a few episodes. We also reminisce about how we've been the drunkest at a party many a time. And please join us as we hunt through the Kingswood for the mystical and elusive Gareth. It is said that finding him brings great favour and wealth upon your house from gods both old and new. Yes, welcome to Bastards and Broken Things.
I just like your little pause and then just look at us for approval.
Yes, hello. This week I'm joined by my fellow lords and ladies. Returning this week, Lady Baron. Hello.
Greetings.
Greetings is quite a Star Trek sort of introduction.
Okay, you know? Good morrow to thee.
Yeah, that's much
more
better.
Shakespeare, I don't know.
I'm not a Star Trek fan, but surely if they're going to planets and greetings is what they're hearing from these bizarre aliens from across the universe, that's terrible, isn't it?
That's what happens.
That's just what they're saying, I guess.
That's what happens. That angry, sort of disappointed voice is, of course, Bronze John, who is here. Hello, Bronze John.
Hello, Leonard.
That's all right. And, of course, the most famous squire in the realm, pathetic little trusty squire Gareth, and cupbearer Gareth. Hello.
All right. Why is he pathetic? Why am I here for that?
I'm joking.
Whatever. Again, whatever you need to make yourself feel better, you go for it, mate.
You're wearing makeup, I'm sure you are. Or you've done something to your eyebrows.
What are you talking about? I'm a naturally pretty man, and I'm tired. This is what happens. Features stand out more.
Sick and
in
tired.
The early morning. Mm.
If anyone wants a peek behind the podcasting curtain, myself and Gareth, due to time difference at the moment between the UK and Australia, get up at 5 a.m. To record these podcasts. So yes,
just take a photo.
We do look haggard.
I hope everyone appreciates that because it's a lot of effort. So I hope all the listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, well, like I hope they do as well. I hope they do as well.
Oh, so we don't actually know if they do. Brilliant.
I'm assuming. Point, isn't it?
John and Lucy, you both all right? Yeah, you both all right?
Good. Good, mate. Yeah, good.
Good, mate.
Good, mate.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the British.
How do they speak? How do they speak in this show? I don't know.
Greetings.
Greetings, Earthlings.
Greetings, Earthlings.
What planet are you from? Earth.
Good.
Okay.
Get on with this.
Let's get away.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Most of this, I think.
Codswallop at the start of this podcast. Okay. As is tradition, let's go round this small council and see how many delicious blueberries we'll be feasting on for this episode. I'm going to start this week with Bronze John. John, please give me your take on episode
three. I think
this
is a mistake.
Nah. This is the order that I've written down, so that's what we're doing. Bronze John, please give me a take on episode three, second of his name.
I woke up this morning feeling very different about the episode versus yesterday, so I'm glad I've slept on it. This is a frustrating episode because I think it has quite a lot of what I like in an episode. I think the split of it was fine in terms of like development of characters. I thought some of the dialogue was pretty good. I quite like when it's just a little bit normal. Obviously, we're continuing this theme of celebration. And yet, I think it was the worst episode of the season so far. Mm. And I know, okay, we're only three episodes in.
It's only three.
Yeah. But, and look, I guess episode three is always a difficult episode because it's
experimental stuff.
It's on the brink of okay, this is where the season's going to go, right? It feels a bit simple, the show. Everything feels really obvious. And some of the acting was shit as well. And I was like, ugh. And then to really stick the knife or the spear into the CGI'd fella. I mean, just if you can't, that took me out of it completely. The CGI of that stag, whatever it was awful. Awful.
Okay, John, I don't want to interrupt your thoughts. It was supposed to be a
bear. That's how bad it was.
But I actually wrote in my notes here something, John, which I forgot to mention at the start, which was how many of us have seen the Lord of the Rings show at this time?
I've only seen the first episode still.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I did listen to your hot take earlier. The Lord of the Rings has a £500 million budget. It's got an MCU. Too much of anything. Skimming off the top.
Give it to charity.
So I'm not going to compare the two, but it's kind of like, I don't know, if I compare the scene in Game of Thrones season one where they had nowhere near the budget that the House of the Dragons got, very simple scene of the puppies and the dead stag. And it's, I get that maybe they don't need to show him kill the stag. I mean, there's a big bad in this episode. We don't see him die. So it's like, well, fucking hell. Do we need to see this fake, crappy CGI animal that moves like no animal you've ever seen? If that happened in a video game, you'd be like, God, this is a bit ropey, isn't it?
Also, the sound effects. He's like, you got, ow. Ow! So that's not what a stag sounds like.
Just poor, isn't it? Just have a guy in a suit, honestly. So I think I'm going to give this episode a free bloob. It's not a disaster by any means, but it kind of feels like every beat in this episode, bar Viserys, when he's getting pissed, that frustration that he has, his interactions with Lord Strong and the Lannisters.
Yeah.
Really good. I like it. I like how that you could see the frustrations eating him up a little bit, but you can also tell that, his naivety, it's building towards this thing that is going to cause some serious issues down the line. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward to the end of the episode and this big, cool moment for Daemon, it just didn't land with me. I sort of watched it and I was a bit it's all right, but fucking hell, it's not Battle of the Bastards. And I appreciate that it's a different scale. But what was the other episode in season four? Episode four. What was that called? Where they get where they meet the Dothraki in an open field and just get absolutely wiped.
Season 7, episode 4, Field of Fire.
Yeah.
The Field of Fire battle.
Something like that. But okay, so an early episode in the season, something happens at the end of that episode and you're like, whoa, that is amazing. Yeah. And it kind of feels like that's what they were going for here. And I watched it and I was like, meh. And it's worse that he just drags out this crabby shit crab guy. He drags him out, just half his body.
Scuttles out.
What's the symbolism here?
Never about the crab man.
Crabs.
It's all about his Daemon's character development.
There you go. All right. Well, Lucy, take us off on your thoughts.
I see what John is saying. I felt like the start of the episode, I found it quite jarring. I don't understand why nothing can be well lit anymore. Why do I have to not be able to see anything? So it kind of like threw you into the action, but I did find that a little bit jarring. I didn't think the sound was great. Maybe it's just my TV, but
no, Gaz said that.
Gaz couldn't really hear what Damon was saying.
I said the same thing.
And, yeah. So that I wasn't in awe of that because I couldn't really see what was happening. But then I thought, okay, this is, if you've got dragons, you should use them. So it is a bit weak of Viserys to not send help to the Stepstones. And then the kind of jump using the child as a kind of plot device to show the passing of time. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I thought it was quite, again, abrupt. I was like, okay. And I don't know why, but I thought the actress had changed for Alicent, and then I sort of realised it hadn't. But I thought, why have they moved her along, but they haven't moved Rhaenyra along? That all of that was a bit leaden, I think. It didn't really work for me too well. But I did think that the episode really kind of... The character of Viserys is what is making me... it's what's bringing me into the show, and it's what's making me want to commit to it, because I just think Paddy Considine, and probably it's the writing as well, but his performance, it just, his motivations, his reactions, the emotions, it's all got a base of truth to me. I just feel like it's coming from a place of reality. And I think the scene with Rhaenyra at the end, I found very moving, and I was like, why is this making me want to cry? I just, you haven't really seen a character like that in Game of Thrones. I mean, Ned was similar, but he obviously wasn't quite as naive or weak. And that's making me invested in the show. I thought the Daemon just not saying a word and going to offer himself as bait, it was pretty cool. But then I just thought,
yeah, it's cool.
This crab man knows he's got a dragon.
Crab man.
And why are all the troops rushing at him when they know there's a dragon around? One man can probably kill him, or, you know, a few of them. Well, I'm sure we'll go on to that scene. But my overall feeling at the end, because I think of the discussion, the dialogue between Rhaenyra and Viserys, and the fact that we're all kind of expecting him to be like, well, yep, yeah, Aegon's going to be my heir. And the fact that he's like, no, like I said, it was you. It wasn't for no reason. And I'm going to commit to that. And whether that happens, you know, I don't know. But I found it quite powerful. And I was like, hug him, give him a hug. And so my reaction towards the end, I give it a 4. And I would have given last episode a 4 as well. I obviously wasn't in here, but I did enjoy that. And I think it was the human element there. And it is I think Paddy Considine's kind of carrying the show for me personally and making me invest in it, because there's not that many characters I care about, but I care quite a lot about Viserys. And I know that's going to bite me in the ass, like it does with every Game of Thrones character you care about. But yes, it would be a 4 for me. Don't smirk.
Lovely. Lovely.
Sir Gareth?
Let us know your thoughts.
Feel pretty similar to the rest of the small council thus far. I'm going to fall down the side of the fence that gives it a 3, though, because I think there was something about this episode. It was weaker than last week's, which I think was a cut and dry 4. And I want to recognise that. I think it's funny. Like, you, obviously, we try to judge everything on its own merits, but you do end up falling. Like, you kind of naturally have to compare episode to episode, and you fall into a bit of a kind of default setting with a show. And I think for me at the moment, this is overall feeling like it might be a 3 blueberry show, three blueberry series. And I think John made a point that I hadn't thought about, but it's a really good one. There's no sign of any kind of twist in the narrative. It's like you can see that there are points of tension, and that there are going to be moments where that tension is released. And they're pretty good. Like, it's a decent setup for those points of tension, but you can't see, and I suppose this is the point of being blindsided, but you can't see anything being that could come out of nowhere to shock you or to surprise you, and there haven't been any seeds sown on that front. But look, that could definitely change. It feels like it is very very kind of linear, which
formulaic
as well.
Yeah,
for Game of Thrones. And I mean, in a way, maybe that's kind of not a bad thing as well, to get a slightly more straightforward structure. But it can, you know, it can lead to moments that are just a bit dull. And I thought, like I said in the hot take, I found the kind of crab thing really disappointing, actually. Like, don't set him up like some creepy Texas Chainsaw Massacre bad guy, and then it's just, he's just nothing, which is just it's a bit shit. I don't know.
Yeah,
the dialogue and the relationships are definitely the strength of the show at the moment. I really loved that scene of Viserys getting steadily drunker and steadily more pissed off. And I quite liked how it was sort of, I don't know, episodic, in that it was like, here's episode one, it's Viserys talking to Otto. And then episode two happened with the Lannisters, and episode three with Lord Strong. It was just, just all quality acting, quality dialogue. I'm intrigued to hear more about who John thinks was poor in terms of acting, because I'm thinking of those dialogue moments and
the fucking Lannisters.
There's a lot of strong stuff.
Gotta be.
My suspicion is it's the Lannisters.
It's actually not at all.
Is it Kristen Cole?
Don't be mean to Crispin.
I will not be mean to Kristen.
Is it the man in the stag suit?
Yeah. He hopped funny.
Yeah, no, it's none of them, actually.
Unrealistic.
And I actually didn't have a major issue with the Lannisters. He's Jason Lannister is a young man that's trying to woo a queen, and, you know, just because he's got no game doesn't mean
that
he's
hot or cool, though. And all the Lannisters are hot and cool, really, in their own way.
No, not really.
Yeah, not really. Tywin's hot and mean. Cersei's hot and mean. Jaime's hot and bit cool and funny.
Here we go.
And Tyrion's hot and clever.
Tyrion's hot and cool.
Mm. And
well,
clever.
But that Jason guy, when he's in Vikings, he's, you know, he's quite a cool character. So I think you're just looking at him as, he's not as good looking as fucking
Jamie Lannister.
His face? Jamie Lannister, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, there's it's actually Lena.
Lena
Valerian.
Lena
Valerian.
Really, he was really bad.
At least he's fighting this way.
I hear his dialogue.
Hey, Line. No, just come on. Come on. Not every time.
His name's not Line, it's Lainor. So anyway.
Awful gag.
Terrible. think this episode's actually got quite a lot of good things going for it. It's a bizarre episode. Like, the pacing's really weird. It opens with, obviously...
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? When it's like, hello, everyone. It's been 3 years since the last episode. So in three episodes, we've done almost 4 years worth of...
Yeah, 4 or 5 years almost, yeah.
Nothing's happened, really.
I really enjoyed getting out of King's Landing, though, because, fuck me, most of the show's been there. The Kingswood and the Stepstones, I thought, was a nice change of scenery. And it had decent moments for Daemon and Viserys. Now, look, we'll talk about the Daemon scenes in a minute, but I'm invested in Daemon. I really like him as a character. I think Matt Smith's actually doing a fantastic job. I think
I'd like to see more of him.
I'm sure you will.
He's very cool, and he's been used quite sparingly. Unleash him.
I mean, this is what we want to do.
I think saying he's doing a fantastic job is a bit... That's gone too far, isn't it? It's too early.
I don't know. I think when you look at the characters available to you at this moment in time in a fucking, like, police lineup, if you said to me, all right, which one do you want to live the most? I would say Daemon.
That's not how it works.
What sort of police station is this?
Kill the rest.
Wait a minute. Is this a police station?
That crab man's just, he's just lying there dead. Like, he's already dead.
He's in half.
Fucking hell. What a weird, anyway. Weird institution that would be. But, yeah.
Right. So anyway, you're at a job interview, and they say, which one of these do you want
dead
to kill off?
I just want a job, please.
Yeah. All right, let me finish. But no, I really like Damon. I do think that he's by far the most interesting character. Him and Rhaenyra are fucking fascinating characters. Like, I will say this, Paddy Considine has wowed me.
Can I just say, sorry, it's like, Considine, it's not Constantine.
And whatever. You've
called him Constantine throughout.
He doesn't give a fuck what he's called.
Constantine. Like,
to be fair, Lucy, you did call him Paddy Considine earlier, but I didn't say anything. Considine.
Considine, he's doing well this season.
Paddy Considine is a really good actor.
he's really improved. Because like John said, in the first episode, it's like they've just whacked a wig on him and you don't really believe that he's a king. And even though he doesn't want to be king in this episode, whatever, but he really is the standout performer so far this season, in my opinion now.
Easy.
Like, I think this episode was absolutely fantastic for him. So look, I think there's great stuff for Viserys. I think there's actually really good stuff for Daemon. We'll talk about the end scene and how unbelievable or designed as a mechanism is to make Daemon look cool, which last episode, if you rewind, is literally what we were saying. We were saying, look, we need to see him in battle. We need to see him being this unbelievable fighter, which we hear about. And it did deliver that in some respects. So we've got to say it gave us what we wanted. The crab feeder thing, bizarre, to build him up and then just nothing. That was just, I don't understand what they were thinking with that.
Like going to Burger and Lobster. Like, sounds all right, actually. And then, it's a bit average.
Bit average. Mm. But yeah, I get that moment's meant to be about Daemon, though. So Lucy had a point about that, which I thought was right. It's about him more so than the crab feeder. But, and like we said, the book that this is based on, you know, there's just a couple lines about it. So they could do what the fuck they want. You know what I mean? In terms of interpretation of that. But I
almost feel like, again, I'm not going to keep referencing Game of Thrones season one, but this show has decided that they have
Get
the same
over
theme.
It.
So I will. That when they're talking about Jaime Lannister cutting through like six men to get through to Rob.
It's hot.
And eventually it sounds so cool. And it does no harm to Jaime Lannister that you don't see it happen. But yet, with the crab fella, it's like maybe that scene might have felt better if he was going through, like wounded, going through that cave, taking people out, and he takes Crab Man out.
Mm.
And it's like no, people see it, and it's like this legendary, like.
Yeah,
wow.
I don't disagree.
But what is the crab man's strength? He just feeds people to crabs. Does he even have a weapon?
What's his special power?
What's his weapon?
I like the way it's
grayscale.
Like a bearish blade, but yeah,
cynicism.
Grayscale, it seems. Mm. Yeah, I like the way that Lucy's sort of looking at it like a game of top trumps. All right, crab feeder.
I do think dragons beat
crabs.
Everything. So if you're like going to wage a 10-year war against the crab feeder, the crab man, when you have dragons, that's pathetic. No, but I mean, had they like carried it on and on, like, no, we just can't get him. He keeps going into a cave. Like, that's pathetic. So I'm glad.
Well, that was shit.
He's scuttling away. That... Like, no.
Yeah. Go and blow some fire in the cave.
Literally blow fire into him.
Well, yeah, I mean, you ask Crab Man, like, what your strengths are, and he sidesteps a question every time, doesn't he?
Do you know what I think it was?
Under strengths, you put crabs.
I reckon the actor had a clause in his contract.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good.
Oh, they should have done a pincer move on him. That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's
I kind of think he found himself in quite a pinch. He found himself in quite a pinch.
I've just done pinch.
You can't just take her point.
Pinch.
Fucking hell.
Pinch.
And that's the end of the puns.
All right, I'm actually going to give it a four because although...
I think you're overshelling it.
Very good. Very good, that one. Although... I think it is slightly weaker than the other episodes. There's a couple of moments in there which I really enjoyed, the Viserys stuff, and I do like the Daemon stuff. And I will say, though, my concern at this point, 3 episodes in, all 4s, which is great scores, but we're still waiting for something to really make our jaws drop. And it's not necessarily a major concern at this stage, but knowing the story like I do, because I, you know, and some of us do in this podcast from reading the book, I am worried. Now, just worried that we're not going to have a moment that creates that pop culture moments, you know? You know what I mean? I'm waiting for
it. I do know what you mean, but I just find it so amusing because listeners will never see this, but he is genuinely worried. The look on your face when you say that sentence, so serious. Like, it's brilliant, isn't it?
There you go. Anyway, that's our scores. A 4, a 4, a 3, and a 3. Before we roll into the plot, we're going to have a quick advert break.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, yes, quick advert here. Just to say thank you for everyone who is listening to this podcast. We really do appreciate it. We would also appreciate you subscribing to either Bastards and Broken Things, but our main channel where everything is posted is called Fan Critical. And we've got so many things on there, reviews of like Stranger Things. We've got our own original content. We're going to have, hopefully, fingers crossed, a Lord of the Rings podcast coming out, reviewing.
You shall not podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. So good,
yes,
that.
We shall.
Thank you, John. But if you want to take your support even further, you can support us on Patreon. Please go to patreon.com/fancritical and donate some precious. See, John, precious. Can you do a Gollum impression? Can you do one?
Hello, everyone. I'm Gollum. Just on the Fan Critical pod. So if you give us some lovely money. Yeah.
How did we get him in?
Oh, sorry, precious money.
how did we get that? Precious monies. Precious monies, please. If you feel like it, please do
Oh, did you listen to that Fan Critical the other day? They had that Gollum on there.
So yeah, please go to patreon.com/fancritical.
So stupid.
And give us some money. You can let us know your feedback as well. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. The email is in the show notes. We really do appreciate your feedback, reviews, anything you want to give us, send it in. Now let's move on to the plot of episode 3.
You forgot.
You forgot what he was doing.
Of where am I?
What are we doing again?
I was Lord like,
something about Gollum.
Yeah. Hey, man, how to get Gollums on there?
Yeah. I was like, I literally had to pause. I was like, what? Where am I? What episode is this? What the fuck's going on? Jesus Christ. Anyway, dear listeners, let's get into the plot. So for 3 years, the conflicts in the Stepstones region have significantly escalated. Lord Corlys and Prince Daemon battle the infamous Kragas Drahar and his pirates without support from the crown, which remains neutral regarding the Southern Realm's situation. We see a very interesting scene here, guys, where it's nighttime, the battlefield illuminated by fire, which I thought personally actually looked pretty good. I think one of the better looking things that the show's done so far. And we see the bloodworm Caraxes fly in, Daemon setting ablaze the crab feeder's men as they scuttle back into their little caves.
It's taken 3 years to get rid of some crabs.
And here's a question. So John in the previous podcast said he's concerned by the time jumps. 3 years, John. Are you still concerned?
Nah. Is that all right? Or
yeah, that's right. That's fine. Well, yeah.
I will say next there question. Are like moments. I'm jumping ahead here a little bit, but there are moments that I guess.
Well, not too far ahead.
Have to be.
Just starts talking about episode 9.
Ahead.
Oh, what's the fucking.
There are moments that sort of have to come with like expositionary dialogue because we've missed those years. And I know why they're doing it. Mm. And obviously that's only going to get more extreme as we go through the season. But, you know, when Rhaenyra's like, I haven't spoken to my uncle in years. It's like, well, you spoke to him in the last episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, we lose
but
that.
Imagine the moment when, you know, as a viewer, you've been sitting there going, oh, man, they've not spoken to each other for at least an episode and a half. When they reunite, it is going to be a magical water like cooler moment.
John and Sam. John and Sam. There's your iconic. All over again. John and I. Beautiful moments.
Yeah.
No, okay, let's talk about this. In some ways, as I said, it's quite a cool opening in a way. Start with a dragon, literally incinerating people, which I thought looked fucking awesome. Similar to what we've seen in the Field of Fire battle, which John referenced at the start of the episode. But we had an interesting hot take, very hot take, about the bizarre comedy situation with this scene. Like,
oh yeah,
what did you guys make of this guy who's like getting crucified and eaten by crabs, giving us some like really weird dialogue? He was like, damn you Mirish prince, son of bastard and whore, Kragas Dragard, our crab feeder, my prince Daemon will come save me. And then like gives all that
expositional,
and then it was bizarre. I've watched the episode 2 times now, and the second time it was terrible. I'll tell you that. I really was like, what the fuck are they doing here?
Oh, but,
And then Caraxes just lands on him. And I said in the hot take, John, which I know you've heard, it was a bit like South Park. It was a very South Park moment.
Well, yeah. Like, so I think I forget who it was. One of you said Monty Python, the other one said South Park. Yeah. And obviously you're both right, because South Park is just Monty Python, but, you know, 30 years later or whatever. Was I that bothered about it when I saw it happen in the episode? Not particularly. Like, maybe because it was so early on in the episode, it was just like, well, it's a comedy moment, which is a bizarre choice. Really is. If it was him suffering, then seeing it, and it was quite a genuine like cry for help, and he landed on him, you'd probably still cry. Yeah. I mean, I'm cracking up thinking about it. maybe some sad music on there as well. But it kind of, I suppose the point is that Daemon doesn't really give a fuck about anyone.
Nope.
But himself.
Nope. And I get that's and, what he's trying to say, but it didn't come across
just
well.
What? Yeah, if you stuck a laughter track on it, you remember that moment where in Small Council, and you've got Tyrion like side-eyeing everyone. Someone stuck a laughter track on it, and it was fucking like perfect, fit perfectly. And this is the same. A weird choice. And I haven't seen who directed this episode versus the others, but it would be interesting to see the tone of the rest of those episodes that whoever directed this episode did for the rest of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say that we see Daemon get shot here as they scuttle into the caves, and then Bloodworm screams out, quite like that. Get a little link, that reference to the link between the rider and the dragon, which I thought was pretty cool. And I really like Bloodworm.
I hate that name though. As a dragon. Bloodworm. Just call him Caraxes.
Yeah, it's because he's long and gangly.
I know why, but
it's
Bloodworm sounds like some kind of parasite. It's not very nice.
Stephen.
Stephen.
Stephen the dragon.
No,
I will Caraxes say. Caraxes is cool. Stephen Caraxes. In the hot take, when you were talking about, I think you called him gangly. I think you said it was very like, like a Chinese dragon. And weirdly enough, when I watched that, I said the exact same thing to Cheryl. I was like, oh, that was quite cool.
It's like we've been podcasting together for years to have these takes.
Well, anyway, we'll be finishing soon anyway. So I don't know if I quite get the personalities of the dragons.
Definitely
I don't
not.
Know if I quite get that.
There isn't one.
If they were in a lineup,
what one?
And you had to kill two of them.
Yeah. You go, all right, we'll definitely kill that shitty fucking CGI stag, whatever it is.
And the boar.
Yeah.
The boar was terrible.
Yeah, the boar wasn't very good.
Oh, my word. I fucking forgot about that. That's terrible as well. How'd you fuck that up?
That was bad.
Just put some tusks on a pig.
Just get a real one. Fucking hell. Like, I'll let the dragons go, but how do the dragons look better than fucking real animals? It's mental. It's mental, honestly. Fucking hell.
Just coming back onto that, actually, because we didn't really get onto the Lord of the Rings conversation, and I do think it's interesting. Like, I had a couple of comments from people saying the effects in this show, House of the Dragon, aren't great, even like the green screen backgrounds and stuff like that. And I kind of agree, but then at the same time, I'm like, it still looks way better than anything else on television. And now it hasn't got that argument anymore. Because I understand the Lord of the Rings budget, but if you're competing in a fantasy realm, and HBO definitely has the money that Amazon does to produce things, so and they're still spending like 20, 25 million per episode on House of the Dragon. I'm sorry, the effects...
Well, that's all going on hair, though, isn't it?
No, it ain't.
Well, fuck yeah, wigs. Judged by those wigs. Man. You get a wig. Free wigs for everyone.
But no, can I have a minimum wage, please, instead?
No, well, stick those tusks on that pig and let's get going.
About minimum wage, so.
No, but genuinely, when you watch it, guys, and when we talk about Lord of the Rings, I think you will also be, and Lucy's already seen it, like, just, it's just incredible. What they've been able, and obviously it's a bit more fantastical, so it's a bit more CGI.
I don't know if it's a direct
miles better
comparison.
It looks miles better.
It does.
Miles better.
But I think if you compare it to actually Game of Thrones, I think a lot of what made Game of Thrones pop is the locations. So you're all different areas in Westeros, so it looks different and it looks interesting, whereas this is quite... we're just in
King's Landing.
King's Landing doesn't even look that nice. Yeah. It's probably not even Croatia. Like, it doesn't even look that great. The dragons
didn't even go
Swindon.
Even
the dragons are okay, but the other animals, like you say, John, the ones that exist, pretty pants.
Anyway, we'll get onto the Lord of the Rings stuff. Honestly, we'll get onto the Lord of the Rings stuff in our Lord of the Rings podcast.
Yeah, let's stop talking about Lord of the Rings.
Imminent. But I do think if you're going to put two fantasy shows head to head, we're going to have to talk about it at some point. I'm not saying Lord of the Rings is better, because it may have looks, but I still think this has more substance. But, you know.
Stop talking about Lord of the Rings.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hell.
It's interesting.
You didn't even want to do a podcast on it, and now you just won't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Just wait.
God, here you go.
Just wait.
Fucking... I'm Lucy, what is it with you selling people out on this podcast? Genuinely. Like, can you stop having a go at people? So anyway, guys, it's been 3 years, and in that time, King Viserys planned hunt to celebrate his and pregnant Queen Alicent's son, Aegon's second birthday.
Why call him Aegon?
I'm calling him Aegon. Aegon is like egg.
They did this since Game of Thrones, because obviously
Aegon is like egg, yeah.
Egg, you know. Anyway. Egg makes sense if you know the canon people, and it follows on to my next question. Who is your favourite Aegon? That's just a question I've written in my notes here. I've put, do I prefer John or do I prefer Egg from Duncan Egg? Difficult conversation, actually. I think I like Egg because I always think of John as John, you know? I don't like calling him. It really annoyed me when his name was Aegon.
I thought he was supposed really to be Jaehaerys, wasn't he? I don't know why they changed it.
No, we all thought it was going to be Jaehaerys.
Because of the Jay connection.
Mm.
Darn Jay.
Yes. Jaehaerys is a cool name.
His name is Jonaris.
No. Well, John being Aegon meant Jonaris. Nothing, so he's not the best Aegon because he's currently beyond the wall doing Nout. Absolutely. So, no.
Well, he's got his own series coming, Lucy,
I'm
called
not going
Snow.
To watch it. No, yeah. So bad.
Okay.
Why
Jesus.
Why? All right.
Well, Lucy's out for that podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not.
How
not...
much money we got for CGI snow? Can we not just go somewhere with snow? It's just easier, isn't it?
Do it in Croatia.
Yeah.
It's not snowing.
Okay. So Alicent is very pregnant again, and she's trying to be nice to Rhaenyra, but Rhaenyra's having none of it. What did you think about their friendship 3 years on? Pretty.
It's fucked, isn't it? It's fucked.
Fucked, isn't it?
Well, she's been fucked.
Jesus Christ, that's crass. That is crass.
That's Kragus.
She's your queen.
Yeah.
She's not the queen I chose.
There's a power move, though, as well, from Alicent. Sending away that dreadful singer who I'm sure is
awful,
somebody...
wasn't it?
Ed Sheeran again. He's come back.
Yeah.
Under the dragon's
eye. This is a new one.
Right. That song was terrible. And it was being sung terribly.
Imagine if it was like Drake or something. That would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
You know what? Yeah. You know who the song was about, though? It's about Nymeria.
Aegon.
And no, it's about Nymeria, how they fled to
Jon
Dorne
Snow.
With loads of ships. And it's interesting because Alicent and Rhaenyra's last chat in the Godswood was also when she was studying Nymeria. Nymeria, obviously, famous warrior princess character who
famous warrior
has her wolf named Nymeria after such legend. So another Arya and Rhaenyra link, which I know you guys really liked in the first few episodes, which I thought was quite interesting. Okay, so Rhaenyra resents the attention her father continuously heaps on Aegon. Their relationship is further strained by Viserys' insistence that Rhaenyra must marry to form a strong sort of alliance with another house and protect their lineage. One suitor is Lord Jason Lannister of Casterly Rock. He's eager to wed Rhaenyra, though she is very uninterested. I've put here... I said in my hot take, the Lannisters in this episode are shit.
Yeah.
I don't believe that they're Lannisters. They don't feel like Lannisters. They don't...
I think that's
about
unfair.
Them. Yeah, that's fair enough. But...
Think of...
he's changed
think
his mind
of,
already.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Were you a Lannister?
Oh, yeah, good point.
No, think of... all it does is strengthen the mythos around Tywin Lannister. Because... Tywin Lannister's dad,
Titus, yeah.
He was a bit of a flannel.
He was.
And for any Americans that are listening, flannel is like... He's a
wet blanket.
A wet cloth.
A wet blanket, yeah. A spanner. Yeah, a cabbage.
Yeah.
and it. So if you were to follow it that way, then that sort of would make sense. If it wouldn't make sense if Jason Lannister came across like a suave Jaime Lannister, or if he came across like a powerful, ruthless figure like Tywin, knowing that Tytos isn't like that at all. So I don't mind that.
I tell you what would be interesting because you know, I was thinking about this actually. Obviously, the words of the house are "hear me roar," yeah. But the words that people associate with the house are "a Lannister always pays their debts." When I'm just trying to think when that came into play, you know, as a saying, because I think it was probably around the time of Tywin, you know. So it's just interesting. Just an interesting thought. I mean, I'm not saying that Jason should have gone, "Hey, princess, hear me roar," or anything or something like that. But, I mean,
I'm telling you now, if you'd have done that, then I would 100% agree with you. And I'd be like, do you know what? This is my last podcast on this show. Because I can't be arsed with this.
Anyway.
If like some random person would have like read the palm of Jason and said, oh, actually, you've got in 100 years from now, you're great great grandnephew, I'd be like, oh, go away, honestly.
Yeah.
And also, there's some eggs somewhere, they're going to be important.
Oh, don't mention the eggs.
It's like that's Lucy, I know you're like this. that just gave me a vision, a prophecy of like a Simpsons episode when Lisa's at that fair. It kind of looks like this hunt, and she just wanders into the mage's tent or whatever, and tarot card reader's tent. And then we got this flash forward. Yeah, in a way. So yeah, just good image that. Viserys spends the hunting party, spends his time there getting absolutely pissed. And he has several conversations. First one of which, Otto suggests that Rhaenyra marries little Aegon, who's what? Just turned two.
The fuck?
Yeah. No. Yes, that's right. That is the right reaction, Lucy. But also, of course, like in this period of time, that's absolutely normal for Targaryens. Like, it's almost weird that that hasn't come up already.
Well, at this time they have started maybe not through necessarily design, but through strengthening their alliances, they have started to move.
Spread their wings.
Spread their wings, their bloodlines to other houses. Like, you know, Viserys was wed to an Arryn, and Daemon is actually also wed to a house that is a banner house of House Arryn. And you've also got, like, you know, the Valyrians in there who are obviously vying for it. You've got the Strongs, you've got these other houses, and the dilution of the Targaryen blood at this point is the most it's ever been diluted in terms of there's so many Targaryen claims at play in this 30 years since the Great Council up to the Dance of Dragons. So they are moving away from it. So it doesn't even
taste like orange juice anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's just too much.
It just
looks like piss, but tastes of nothing, like water.
But you are right, Gareth, that it's only been about 50 years since that was just common practice. Like, there would be no marrying other houses or anything, or not very little.
But it's more like with Rhaenyra, she doesn't want to marry an adult man. Why would she want to marry her 2-year-old half brother? Yeah. Come on,
you
Otto.
Don't want to marry
not all
Jason,
girls are as
what
pliant
about
as
this
your
toddler?
Daughter.
What about this toddler?
Yeah. What about your brother, hey? He's blonde.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit much.
What's wrong with that?
It's a good reminder to the viewer, to us. You know, I was watching it with my partner Mel, and she was like, is that the half brother? And I was like, yeah. She was like, what the fuck? I said, yeah, so what you don't know about Targaryens is they keep it in house, yeah? Okay? And she was like, what the fuck? So there's a lot of things going on where they're planting some seeds for you to just accept some of the weird shit that's going to happen, okay? So just get ready for that.
I did also wonder, just to go back to that, if Otto was kind of sort of doing a bit of smoke and mirror, so suggesting something that would be so out of hand that, you know, Viserys would be more keen to marry off Rhaenyra somewhere else. So she's out of the picture. She's not in King's Landing. And then he can keep going with his make Aegon king.
Well, heir. It's win-win, isn't it?
So I feel like there must have been a part of him that's like, no one's really going to agree to this, but it might spur, it'll still come back on me in the way that I want it to. That wily Otto.
Yeah. He's wily, very clever. Very clever. John, I've written here, I've seen you in a very similar state to Viserys many times, genuinely.
The last time I saw you.
Last time we saw John.
The last time I saw both of you, actually.
Yeah.
Remember he wandered off? He wandered off.
3 in the morning in Melbourne City Centre, and he just wandered off, and then he lost his phone, and he was staying in like the countryside. So like a 2-hour cab journey away or something. And we hadn't heard from him. And I was just like, what the fuck has happened here? And that's the way he gets. And that's the way Viserys gets this party. And I thought...
Well, we're both stressed out. Like, quite. People just constantly trying to marry me and my family. I'm like, just fucking leave me alone. Jesus Christ. He's supposed to be an Amazon driver. Just, you know what I mean? sick of it.
Well, as I said, I thought this was Viserys' best stuff in this episode, like his conversations.
Before we get to the next conversation, the only thing that annoyed me about this little scene, because I loved it, I did love it, but they kept cutting back to Alicent, like looking slightly concerned and rubbing her belly. Mm.
The worst belly ever. So fake. Terrible, pregnant yeah. belly.
No, what do you mean? That's a CGI belly.
Terrible. Worse than the deer.
That's the same guy who played the deer.
Yeah, he's in there.
Curled up.
She's quite skinny, though. She's quite skinny, so I'm
less concerned about the size of the belly and just more the decision to like...
If we could talk about the size of the belly, please.
It was just annoying. And like, she wasn't doing anything. It wasn't adding anything to this scene. It just kept cutting to her, looking mildly concerned.
Well, a lot of people...
It's a creative choice, isn't it?
It is. They're just trying to make her more prominent, like she's cunning and, you know, observing and taking things in, which will change, obviously. Lord Strong, who I think is slowly becoming the most sensible member of the Small Council, recommends that Rhaenyra weds Sir Laenor Valerian, Lord Courtly's son, who John thinks is a terrible actor. And he's just had to repair the rift between the two houses.
I'm not having a go at the actor. I'm just saying he's acting.
Yeah.
In that whole bit, it was awful.
I'm not having a go at him, but it was terrible. Absolutely awful.
I mean, you go back and listen to the delivery of these lines at the end of the episode.
I have twice.
But also, it gets very never-ending story on fucking T-Smoke, the dragon.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, we'll talk about that. What's he doing, mate?
But at least you got to see Seasmoke's personality come through.
It's a cool name, though. Seasmoke's a cool name.
Yeah.
It is. I heard Seasmoke also go, yeah! Woo!
Okay, so we're seeing a bit more of the Strongs in this episode. So not only do we have... Lord Lionel Strong, who is obviously the guy on the Small Council,
he's right.
We see his son Larys, the clubfoot, because he has a clubfoot.
Kasabian.
He basically has no fighting talent, obviously, and he plays up to that, and he's like, oh, you know, he's more of a character like a la Littlefinger, you know, listening in, you know, trying to get some gossip, all that sort of jazz. And we also see Sir Harwin
go and get some gossip.
Yeah, he sits with the women. He's like, look, you know, I've got a knackered foot. I'm just going to sit with you lot if that's all right. That's what he actually says.
Talk amongst yourselves. Yeah,
got any gossip?
Yeah.
What's the tea?
Let me just get my notebook out. In all seriousness.
I've heard the stag's not even real. It's CGI, apparently.
You seen that Lord of the Rings show? Fucking good, eh?
Better than shit.
So we see Sir Harwin break bones strong, his other son, who has a little look at Rhaenyra later on when she comes back covered in blood, and he's all excited. He's like, oh, yeah. Ooh, I like a bit of that.
Yes.
So I'm just saying, keep an eye on those characters because they have more to do, for sure, as the season goes on.
Keep an eye on them. Just, right. No spoilers, but...
If you see him in a lineup. I'm just saying. Okay, right.
Don't kill him off at this point.
Well, get that guy a chair if they're going to be in a lineup, because...
Fucking hell. Anyway, Rhaenyra has run away because she's annoyed about this whole Aegon supplanting her situation. And
Aegon her face.
She's gone with Sir Crispin.
Hey, come on. Yeah, she's 2 years old, for fuck's sake. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not setting them up. That's on Otto.
Yeah,
that's true. So Crispin is, you know, Crispin and Damon so called him that.
It's so Crispin just,
has,
it's fun.
Has gone with her. They have a lot of little conversations.
They have a lot of conversations.
Yeah. They have one.
Yeah. Two. Two conversations.
You get the impression that they're quite like, she gets on well with him and she sort of trusts him.
Well, yeah.
She probably fancies him.
That's right.
Obviously.
Well, probably. Well, she definitely does fancy him.
Fucking hell.
Hot-blooded dragon woman.
He's a good-looking boy.
Yeah, he's don't know about the hair when he once he took his helmet off. I feel like his voice could use some work, but he's got potential for sure.
Hello best there, princess.
Best of a bad
He
bunch.
Speaks a bit like this.
Yeah. How's my hair when I've taken this helmet off? Is it all right?
How does
my
hair
look, princess?
Yeah, I was a bit mad when he said that, wasn't it? Yeah. He called me crisps, man. All right, let's relax.
And I swore vengeance against him after he said that.
Yeah, it's been 3 years-ish. I'm not counting the months.
Give or take.
So she kills the boar with the help of Crispin, and she chooses at the end of the episode not to kill.
Skip quite ahead, suddenly there's a boar. So she kills the boar. Right, yeah.
Yep. No, but the White Hart thing, does this mean that the gods favour her as queen and ruler, you think?
No.
It's supposed to signify that, I think. That's what she's going to interpret it as.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I said to Gareth in the hot take, I thought it was an interesting choice to let the White Hart go. Imagine if she had rode back into camp with the White Hart.
On it.
Viserys
She'd ridden the White Hart.
Viserys is a fucking, he wants to be a dreamer. He wants to believe in these prophecies. And the White Hart is that symbol. And that's why he's so disappointed with the regular stag. Because it's not the favour that he thinks the gods
just regular
should bestow
stag.
Upon him. So I think...
Sorry, it's a Labrador, isn't it? Fucking hell, it's not even a stag. It's just a Labrador. You kill it anyway. Yeah.
It looks like... I've just been thinking about it. You guys played... Guys, it's not Duck Hunt. Buck Hunt. Sorry, Buck Hunt.
I love Duck
yes.
Hunt.
yeah, close.
But similar.
It's like
similar.
It's like being at the fucking arcade. It moves like one of those bucks on the screen, just like jumping around. Anyway, so
yeah,
that was
you
my
struggled
take on that.
With Buck Hunt, didn't you?
I got much better as the session went on, and you got much worse because you got pissed because it was your stag do, pardon the pun, and we got you fucking hammered. So whatever.
Well, they call it a bucks in
Australia. Yeah, I was thinking that.
They do. They do call it a bucks, yeah. But stag, I felt, was more relevant to the episode. Anyway, if, Gareth, this is a good point. If we were to get you very hammered, like I mentioned in the hot takes, and we set you loose in the Godswood, who do you think out of me, John, Emma, or Lucy would catch you first?
How drunk are we all? Are we drunk?
John's obliterated.
So he's not going to catch him.
Barely can move.
Well, I mean, I would have no interest in catching him. I'd just go back to the tent and just get pissed.
Yeah.
You know, why am I chasing this guy?
Why is
he's rapid. Fucking waste of time.
I am very quick.
Why is it?
I am very fast. So none of you are catching me through regular means.
Yeah. Mm. He's going to be dead in 2 hours anyway. So fucking hell.
Hypothermia. Because he's naked.
Tomorrow.
He's naked and it looks cold out there. So...
he ended up in a police lineup and picked in to do
executioner squad.
Good point. It'll be Emma because you know she'll ask politely and I'll say yeah, all right, I'll let you win, Emma. Well done. Whereas the rest
That's
of
a
you
cop out.
You're dogs.
Cop out.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's our thoughts on that. They leave the hunt, and on his brother's advice, because we see a Hightower brother here, Otto urges Alicent to persuade the king to name Aegon as heir, furthering the Hightower's powers and prestige.
Aegon, his
and...
face.
Hey, come on,
John. You had some thoughts on this. You had some thoughts on this scene.
I mean, they weren't my thoughts. It was a bit of a debate on Twitter, on the twitter.com. So check it out. a lot of people pissed off that in the books it's heavily suggested that Alicent is the one that's like power hungry and pushing for her son to be king, as opposed to needing Otto to push her in that direction. She's coming across as a very like sympathetic character in the show,
yeah,
one that's been put in a position rather than asked for it, whereas in the books it's very much not that. It's a power hungry Alicent. Having said that, we know that the books are aren't fact. They are the they're an interpretation of events that have happened from someone else's opinion. So I guess it depends on what you want to believe. If you want to believe that the show is canon, then I mean, okay, fine. There's no problem there. It feels a bit of a cop out, to be honest.
It feels interesting because I know in some of the pre-interviews that before the show came out, they were like, "Oh yeah, so is this going to stick to the book Fire and Blood?" And they were like, "Largely yes. The main events will sort of stay the same, but how we get there is open to interpretation in some aspects, because in the book, it's a Grand Maester who is recounting all of these first-hand accounts from people at the time. So there's very rarely lines of dialogue, right? Because they'll be like, it's said that this Maester overheard this, blah, 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 blah. And they've also, so there's actually an interesting way they do it in the book is they have this balance between someone who you could believe, like a Maester, who might only hear things on the surface, may not hear some of the background conversations. And they also have a take from Mushroom, who is essentially a dwarf jester who is absolutely insane, you know, crazy, and is very... what's the word, John? He makes everything sound very sordid and just, you know, sexual and disgusting, and he really gets to like the gossip behind everything.
It's you from the early years of Fan Critical, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. So they have this different take. So they've got this. So the way they do it in the book is like, Grandmaster da-da-da said this about it, but Mushroom would have you believe something different. He said they stayed in their chambers all night, da-da-da-da. You know, and Mushroom says there's loads of rumours like that Alicent and Viserys had been sleeping together at the time of when Queen Emma was alive. There's also things where Mushroom is like, you know, some relationships that happen later on, he says they've been in the making for years, and it's all been happening in secrecy in the Red Keep. So there's this whole thing about it leaves it up to you to decide what is going on. And usually you imagine the truth is somewhere in the middle. So how they're painting these characters, I have no issue with, because I don't necessarily believe the words in the book. I just know that the main events happened. I don't really take verbatim anything they say unless it's a literal event, like someone dying or there being a war or something like that. Do you know what I mean? I think they can have a bit of wiggle room. And that makes it interesting for someone like me who's read it and you, John, and other people who have read it, because then you're like, oh, this is interesting. It's interesting how they're taking the direction of these scenes or these characters.
Yes, yes. But I guess in episode one, you know, I made the point of saying, you know, did Daemon say, did he toast? Yeah, like, did he say it? And you don't see it in the show. And in the books, it's said that he said it from someone else's opinion.
That's right.
But it's still down to interpretation in the show. Maybe he said it, maybe he didn't. So I guess, is it potentially problematic that the show is very much taking Alicent is not complicit in this whole thing. She is someone that's falling into a trap because of her very manipulative father.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting because obviously the time moves quite quickly, so we should see some growth from her character. You know what I mean?
Something, she's already quite smart. Something could happen to change her character's sort of motivations anyway.
Exactly.
I don't know what.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And there are things that, you know, in the books happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how her character develops, because you're right, John, she is painted as this more sort of empathetic character at this point. Like, she's like, oh, it doesn't have to be this way, Rhaenyra. I'm trying really hard with you, blah, blah, blah.
But you could see that scene as her being manipulative. You know, there's at least you could interpret it that way, or you could say she was being genuine. But when she's talking to her dad in that in the chambers, you know, she says to her dad, you know, she's going to make a good queen. She's going to make a good queen. And her dad is very insistent that no, you know, the lords won't allow it. You know, it's we're breaking tradition here. Aegon has to be king. So, you know, the show has taken it. It doesn't even matter now what happens with her personality, right? Because in the books, it's portrayed as she was always that person. Whereas in the show, it's like, well, no, actually. So I'd be interested to see where they take it.
Did you notice that Viserys was missing two fingers in this scene?
Apparently, there's like shots where you can see the green. You can see the green screen. You can see it's just his green fingers.
So it's quite interesting. Do you remember he got cut by the Iron Throne, and then last week they had maggots on his fingers? He's lost those two fingers, and they're sort of really disgusting. Like, the stumps are all like black and infected and whatnot. And then at the end scene where he hands the parchment to say, take this to the Stepstones at once, his fingers are back. So there's a bit of a continuity error there. But he definitely was missing them in the scene by the fire with Alicent.
That was to show the passage of time. They've gone back.
Yeah.
They do that. They grow back.
Made new fingers. But it's to show you the fact that he's getting weaker.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about Viserys saying that he's not going to supplant Rhaenyra?
I thought it was very just a bit different to what you see in Game of Thrones. I know it's not Game of Thrones, but you know what I mean. Just the kind of the lack of malice there, and he hasn't shown any malice. And even when he was drunk, you're expecting him to kind of lash out a bit. I was anyway. And he doesn't. Like, he just, you know, people say he's weak and that he's naive. And I guess that might be true. But I think his heart is in the right place. And I think that he does have the ingredients to be a good king. I know he is king, but I don't think being brutal is necessarily a prerequisite for being a good king. And I thought it was really, I found it quite moving. That I think the acting together and the dialogue was really good. And it was maybe not what I expected. I expected, because people say he's weak, that he would be swayed by his, you know, his wife and Otto. But there's obviously, he's got a bit about him that he really does love his daughter, and he probably does think that she would make a good queen.
All right. Well, here's a question for you. And I mean, Gaz, you can answer as well if you want. But I'm interested to hear, based on that, do you think, so he's a good man, not necessarily a good king, but he's a good man. Do you think, when we talk about the tough decisions and it's not an ideal world that they live in, do you think he should be turning around and saying, look, I have to make Aegon my heir now? You think he should be?
No,
as like,
because I don't see why that's better for the realm than having Rhaenyra, who I think we know is a known, much more of a known quantity, and we know would most likely be a good queen that would bring stability. And I do kind of think, if you're king, can't you just change tradition? Just change it.
Well, I think it would be a groundbreaking kind of legacy defining moment for him. Like, you know, if he's been an average king, like this would be something that he'll be remembered for forever, and it sets his legacy in stone. I think the issue, though, isn't with that or with Rhaenyra. It's that it almost certainly will kick off a war.
Mm.
Like, there will be discontent as a result. Like, whether that should be or not, that's what's going to happen.
If you're in a room and you've got 100 people in the room, representing 100 houses, and 50% of them are like, oh, I'm not happy about this, but okay, I mean, I'll go along with it because you're the king. And the other 50% are like, well, yeah, he's just king, so I'll just follow whatever he says. And then you leave the room and everyone starts kicking off. Like, is it not just easier to go, do you know what? Let's just do the thing that everyone in the room is going to go with.
Sometimes,
even if it might upset one person, what is easy and what is right
are not the same thing. So,
very good point, Lucy. But this does end up causing a massive war.
You're a good person, Lucy.
A sweet summer child. A sweet summer child.
You have a good heart.
White one.
You make an awful queen.
That is true. Too absent-minded to be queen.
As we said, the king sends aid to Daemon in the Steptones.
See, he's such a good guy.
Yeah. But Daemon hates this, almost kills, or probably does kill, the fucking message deliverer. And instead goes with a crazy plan to lure out the crab feeder with a surrender and then ambush tactic. It works. Daemon dodges what seems like 1,000 arrows and slaughters sellswords left, right and centre with his ancestral Valyrian sword, Dark Sister. Then Sir Laenor, riding his dragon Seasmoke, appears and helps defeat the Triarchy warriors. Daemon then heads into the cave and kills the crab feeder. I've written in brackets off camera. Let's go for thoughts on this. I think overall that the sequence is, look, in isolation, I think it's quite impressive. I think it looks pretty good. I think the music, I thought, was actually very good. I know we've been slagging off Ramin Djawadi this season because of the choices not to make a new theme tune. But I will say that the music here was, from the whole sequence of him getting the letter, it was this like piano motif. It reminded me of the finale of season 6, The Winds of Winter, where you had that piano stuff over the Sept of Baelor and that sort of stuff. I thought it was very different to the usual arrangement of music that we get from Game of Thrones. And that carried on throughout the whole scene. It had this sort of eerie, interesting feel to it. It made it a bit more epic. And I really enjoyed it, actually. I do think the scene's problematic with the staging. I think it's just unbelievable. When you see the way that Game of Thrones has basically killed off characters for much less before, you know, like George R. R. Martin always says, like, you know, you think, you know, Ned's on the fucking chop block. You think someone's going to come save him. Rob just won a battle at the Whispering Wood, and you don't really know, you know, how far that is, whatever. But you're like, someone's going to come save him, and then he's just dead. And I think for a show like Game of Thrones, to have a battle like this is a bit bizarre, because if this is George's writing, he probably dies the way that this is staged. Do you know what I mean? You've got volleys, you've got fucking thousands of arrows being fired at him, surrounded by fucking sellswords pirates, a supposedly fearsome adversary in the form of the crab feeder. Now, look, I'm not against some crazy, you know, chancy, ballsy moves. I'm thinking back to something even like Band of Brothers, where you've got, like, I think it's Lieutenant Spears, and he just fucking waltzes through two, like, German battalions to deliver a message and then waltzes back out again. And apparently stuff like that actually fucking happens. Like, some people do just run through a battlefield, take down some people and get out of there, and you're like, how the fuck
dancing,
is that person?
That's even more impressive.
And it's a slow dance as well, isn't it? A waltz.
Yeah. But did you guys think this was, it served the purpose of making Daemon looked awesome when he was like, he was absolutely chopping people up and doing like rolls, dodging arrows, and it looked quite cool. But do you think it was just a bit unbelievable?
I think this guy, so Krabby's had like a stranglehold over the Stepstones for what? How many years now? 3 or 4?
Krabby now.
3.
So he's obviously got quite strategic like nous, and then he completely falls into this very obvious trap. You do know this guy has a dragon. Why are you coming out to him? Why are you letting everyone else come out to him? It's one man. Get your archers. Yes, let them knock and fire and all that. What? It's just, I was like, this is, I just kept saying, you know he's got a dragon.
Silly.
And he's looking up for the dragon. And it's like, oh yes, here it comes. it was very, especially, I mean, it doesn't really bother me that the crab thing's over, but it was so short-lived, and then it's just, he just fell for it that quick after it being like, on the one hand, it's been 3 or 4 years. On the other hand, he dies so quickly because he's fallen into a really obvious trap. So it was just a bit like, eh. It was very cool the way, like, Damon just didn't even say a word, how he would literally rather sacrifice himself and be eaten by crabs than accept any help from Viserys and let him get any credit. That's hilarious to me. Yeah, that's very cool. Little brother energy. I respect that. But just the actual play-by-play of how he did it, I was like, the crab would never fall for this if he's this smart.
The crab.
Crab man.
I will say in the book, it just says something, a little excerpt, like it's like, you know, Daemon then invaded the Stepstones atop Caraxes, and they had less numbers or something, and then they won loads of battles, and he kills Craggar, his name?
Crabman.
Craggus Tregar with his sword, Dark Sister. So they've obviously expanded that. Obviously they can for this elaborate ruse.
It's difficult, isn't it? It's like you read the books, and there's only really one house that stand up to the dragons, and that's Dawn. It must be difficult to be writing that scene going, right, okay, well, basically, and we said it at the end of the last episode, where it's like, I expected it to just, well, they're just going to turn up with a dragon and just burn everyone.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind, they're just standing on a beach somewhere. It's like, fucking hell, this is going to be a piece of piss. So it makes sense for them to be in the caves and to that to negate the dragon thing. So I have sympathy where it's like, well, how are you supposed to even this up to make it seem like there's any sort of peril? But the way in which they go about it is, oh, fucking hell. Yeah, just shit, innit?
Yep. I mean, I just think they build up the crab feeder. They make him far more interesting than he seems in the book, and they give him this grayscale affliction, and I was like, okay, maybe that's going to play into it somehow. But then, like, Damon at the end is carrying out the guy by his hand, and I was like, if he has got grayscale, don't fucking touch him, man.
Yeah,
don't fucking touch him.
Also, what happened to his hair? Why was it just blood?
Get off of him.
Because we thought maybe he'd been burnt or something had happened to his head, Damon, because it looked like his hair was all not blonde.
Yeah,
he looked a bit singed.
I think it's blood.
Why has he got it all on his head? Crab blood.
Well, I think it was fire and blood.
Well,
yeah.
We'll never know. We didn't see it.
Good point.
Off screen.
Imagine if that. Well, imagine they said that. He comes out of the sky. Yeah. have a look at your hair, mate. Looks like you've got a bit of fire and blood on there. And yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, that's quite good.
Laenor atop Sea Smoker, I was a bit like underwhelmed, like we talked about.
I didn't
about.
Even know he had a dragon, so I was like, who's that?
Yeah.
Who's that now?
Yeah, he has one.
Yeah.
Sea Smoke. is a cool dragon, like we said. But like, yeah, he was a bit bizarre. And obviously look out for Laenor in future episodes, because that is the one that Rhaenyra was suggested to marry.
That's a good idea, I think. So I think I'm down with that.
Very
I
good
get
idea.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Politically astute.
And they're similar ages. It just seems like, yeah, seems all right. I'll sign off on it.
Well, they might not want it.
Yeah, well.
They might not want it.
True.
Duty comes first.
I'm just going to say, I hope this is a one-off, like, type of battle scene, and that this season is going to do them better, because if so, then like it is quite a cool scene in isolation, like, you know, just the thought of Damon being a cool little solo renegade, that's fine, that's not a problem. But it's just that it's the first kind of proper battle that we've seen, and it was underwhelming, and I mean, I think we've touched on it, but just the decision to not show him killing the crab feeder is weird. And why haven't we seen that? It's just bizarre. And if you're not going to see it, then don't set him up as this creepy bad guy, like that we want to see meet with an untimely end. Like, don't do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, no, I agree. You are right, Gareth. You are right. And I hope... look, I don't think it's awful, but I think it's a bizarre choice. And we'll see how they deal with these situations later on in the season. But I think we've rambled enough about the plot. Let's move on, as is our duty, to our feedback section. You can write into us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. The email is in the show notes. You can also comment on social media or, you know, whatnot, anything like that. Just get in touch with us any way you fancy. once again, all the links in the show notes. We've had some nice feedback this week because obviously we posted quite a, you know, antagonistic email last week. Had a few comments of support, like this one from Terry. Said, as always, thoroughly enjoying your take on all things in the GRIM world. So that's nice. We've also had a nice email from Tim Pickerel, who has said this. Love your show. My favourite part of the Rogue Prince is how Otto Hightower, Hand of the King for Viserys Targaryen, is so stupid that he lives in King's Landing, where they have dragon pits, dragon eggs, supposedly 9 dragons, but is somehow surprised when he goes to a place called Dragonstone to swing his dick at Dragon Prince, who is a dragon rider, and is confronted by a dragon. Real genius this guy is when it comes to anything other than getting King Scabby McOpen Sores to open his maggot hands on his daughter.
Hey, gross. Don't be so rude about Viserys. He also says,
much love from the States. Tim has a podcast called Watchers on the Couch podcast. So please do check that out. That's Watchers on the Couch podcast. But he also said, and I thought this was very good, fuck that Joe Coward guy who wrote in last episode. As Bron would say, there's no cure for being a cunt. I, for one, would be elated.
I've never said that.
I, for one, would be elated to see you all in hell because you are hilarious.
Oh.
So that is a very nice email from Tim. So thank you very much, Tim, and thank you for the support. And yeah, Joe, fuck off, basically. Yeah.
Sick yeah.
Didn't
yeah,
we
I
say,
don't know. Maybe I'm rallying. Maybe I'm rallying behind opinion. Joe. Yeah.
That's yeah, I'm if Joe. Fan. If Joe was in a lineup, right? So, thanks for that, Tim. We also have an email. We're running out of time. We've run very long this episode, but we've got an email from Vicky who says, "Hey guys, loving the show. Just a thought on the title sequence. What are the icons all about? I saw a few things that said it linked to characters: Rhaenyra's necklace, the crown for Viserys, etc. So, in a way, is the blood flowing to them like a family tree? Just a really obscure one. What do you think?"
That is a good shout, because I was wondering that when I was watching it, because obviously in Game of Thrones it's sort of the different castles, etc. And I was like, what does this even mean? This is quite underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean,
but her idea, that's a good idea.
Every time I see it, I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ. I genuinely think my idea of family tree would be way better. Really would.
I think it's a shit version of one, I think. I think it's a shit version of one because it's so obscure and it's like we know the content to an extent and the histories and stuff like that, and then we're still like fumbling around going, oh, what's that icon mean? You know, it just needs to be a bit more explicit for the casual viewer, I think. And I get the idea of the Targaryen blood spreading since the conquest of Westeros. I like that. I like the idea of that. But then to put it within Valyria is a bit baffling to me because it's kind of like the only way we know that this is Valyria is because obviously if you've read the books, you'll be like, oh, maybe that's Valyria. Or you see that model. But otherwise you'd be like, you'd want it in Westeros. The whole point is their blood... since they came over from Dragonstone and that, like we talked about, diluting. So I think the title sequence is very muddled. I just completely underwhelmed by it.
Yeah. What if they had like the different dragons as well? Because like...
Yes.
With their personality type listed underneath.
Yeah.
They might get added in as things change.
Skittlish.
You never know.
Maybe. But it's like if you, you know... If you have no law, and you watch that last episode, you'd just be like, who's he riding there? Some people probably thought that Laenor was riding fucking Caraxes, to be honest. It was going so quickly.
I know Caraxes is reddish.
Can I tell you, 100%, because I've fallen into the habit of having subtitles on everything all the time.
Yeah, me too.
That's the only reason I knew like who the dragon was, because it said Sea Smoke Roars. I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, did it actually?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, fair. Yeah. So the deaf community are way ahead of everyone else.
100%,
cool.
They get all the insight.
That's
true.
Very good.
And that brings this episode and this small council to a close for another week. It has been a long and arduous journey to get to where we are, but we have reviewed the episode. We've given you our lovely feedback. You've given us your feedback, and thank you so much for that. It has been a tricky episode to cover, a weird paced episode, one that I think we all hope the show sort of doesn't need to bounce back from, but I think it needs to sort. I do think we need an episode to really fucking up the game. I think they're trying.
It needs to crack on now, doesn't it?
I think they're trying, like John said, and we've talked about, they haven't necessarily, there's no twists yet. There's nothing that's surprising us. Even it just needs that moment. There's something there. It's very good, but it just needs that spark to elevate it. And of course, that could happen. Traditionally, I will say, and we all know this, it usually happens on episode 9. There's that moment. The moment of the season is always episode 9, right? So let's see.
Can't wait that long, though, can we, really?
Well, we can, Lucy. We can't. You know, it's still getting fours, guys.
Yeah, from me and you.
Three from us two. And I reckon Lucy might change her mind afterwards as well.
The ladies.
Episode 9, just Sea Smoke, just his head there. Cerulean Payne's come out of nowhere, so he's not even been born yet. Off of Sea Smoke's head. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Subtitles. Yeah.
And Laenor clinging onto a statue as he sees it.
Laenor clinging onto Caraxes. Caraxes is like, don't look, boy.
Yeah. Don't look.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll catch you next week for a hot take and then another deep dive. See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.